This morning, Pope Benedict XVI did what no pope has done in more than 500 years. He announced his resignation. Speaking in Latin, the pope said he's leaving the position as head of the Catholic Church on February 28th because he no longer has the strength to fulfill the duties of his office. With no clear favorite to succeed him, the announcement has sent the already troubled church scrambling to replace the leader of its 1 billion followers by Easter. The announcement could also have an impact on continuing efforts to find justice for the thousands of people who say they were the victims of childhood sexual abuse by priests. In 2011, a complaint was filed in the International Criminal Court against high Vatican officials and Pope Benedict personally for his role in the cover-up of specific crimes. Pam Spies is a senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, which filed the complaint on behalf of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP. She says the Pope's resignation itself shouldn't really affect the case in the International Criminal Court, which doesn't recognize immunity for heads of state, but it could clear the way for other international legal action.
There were no legal hurdles to prosecuting Ratzinger, but there are a number of political hurdles which could be removed because he's no longer acting as the head of state, as the Vatican, the Holy See, considers itself a country. That political hurdle is removed by him stepping down. But in addition, there are a number of countries that could have it within their domestic laws to prosecute crimes against humanity. So they could actually begin looking to investigate and possibly bring charges against him. And it's at the national level where you see a lot of deference being paid to heads of state through the head of state immunity, for instance, for these types of crimes. So the fact that he will no longer be a sitting head of state can also make it easier to bring these types of charges or even civil cases against him in domestic settings as well.
Is that likely to happen, though?
Well, we don't know yet. I can tell you that since we filed the case before the International Criminal Court in September of 2011, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests have heard from survivors in, now it's more than 65 different countries around the world, and they will be having the first conference, international conference of survivors in Dublin in April. So we don't know if it's possible, but we do know that people are waking up to the need for accountability, that in many places the church has outlived its spin on these issues, that it's actually dealing with it. And we know, as more evidence has come to light, that it's actually been the policy that actually keeps it going. What I do know is that there is increasing awareness and pressure being built in different places, and that we are certainly going to continue in this struggle for accountability with the Survivors Network. And I know that there are other efforts as well that will be continuing to build, either at the national level or in the international human rights arena.
To what extent can the church itself be held accountable, or can it?
Well, I think one of the ways that it has to be held accountable is that you pierce, sort of like piercing the corporate veil, you pierce the veil and get at the individuals who are actually responsible for keeping this policy and practice going. So one piece is holding the individuals accountable behind the institution. But then I think the church has been allowed to do this and get away with it for so long because governments and countries around the world have been deferring to the church when it says it's our problem, we're dealing with it. And so when you're dealing with crimes of rape and sexual violence in any other context, the state would step in and do something about it. But in many cases around the world, you have many instances where the states have not done that, but have allowed the church to continue to exercise its authority over these areas, and it has done so in a way that ensures these things will continue.
So what would accountability consist of in a case like this, where it's not just individuals but also an institution that is global in nature, and often governments have recognition of the church, and as you pointed out, a sovereign nation?
Yeah, in fact, the Vatican is second only to the U.S. in the number of embassies it has around the world and that type of diplomatic relationship. You have the direct perpetrators of these offenses, but you have the fact that they're operating in this climate and in this environment which facilitates the abuse. And individual accountability is key to pierce through that, because so often the church takes on this gloss that it can't be touched and that the humans within it who are responsible for these policies and practices can't be touched. So I think that's key. I think the other piece is that we have to understand that it is not a country, right? It is not its own country. It doesn't have citizens. It's not accountable to anyone. And so people who are victim of these offenses, victimized by these offenses, have no place of going. They have to rely on their local governments or their state governments, and then they're deferring to the church. So I think we have to understand it's not its own country, and it has to be held accountable like any other corporation or institution.
This case was filed in September 2011, and additional evidence or documentation was presented in April of last year. The prosecution is currently reviewing the evidence. When do you expect any movement on this case?
That's hard to say. In the first filing that you mentioned, we presented them with over 22,000 pages of documentation, which really sets out and shows how these policies and practices have operated to enable and facilitate these types of crimes. So we gave them a lot to look at, and then in April we followed in with several thousand pages more documentation that had come to light just in the 6 months since we filed the first communication. It often takes the prosecutor's office a long time to look at these things, so there's no set timetable. And even since the April filing, there's been more evidence that's come out. We just saw in the last couple of weeks the document release from the Los Angeles Archdiocese, which also shows that successive bishops have been operating pursuant to a very clear policy from the Vatican in the way that they were handling these types of cases. So that's just more evidence that keeps coming to light, not only here but in other countries, which really proves the point. So we anticipate we'll be filing more evidence and give them more to look at as we learn more.
Pam Spies is a senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights.